listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mades.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mades from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We've got all kinds of people covering the team, credentialed writers like myself, Zach Mikash, lots of people covering it from all different angles. So if you've never checked out DenverStiffs.com, be sure to head on over there and see all the great content that we provide. This episode of the show, I'm actually excited for it. It's a 10-10, my last 10-10 of the year. I was going to save this for after the season, but there's going to be so much to talk about after the season that I think it'd be nice to kind of wrap up here. I also kind of like to there's this famous saying by I think it's Stan Van Gundy is the one that said it for the first time, where he says, write your story when the ball's in the air. And what he means by that is if the outcome of a jump shot determines whether, you know, significantly changes your perspective on like a specific game, then you need to reconsider, because this game has a lot of luck involved and a lot of different things. When the ball's in the air, try to decide, was it a good play that they ran? Was, you know, were all these things positive, negative? Because if the shot rolls out and your perspective changes, you might be being a little bit reactionary. So for the Nuggets, I mean, there are some things that it does matter, win or lose, wins and losses, things like that. But I think tonight is so much can change with the Nuggets based on whether they win or lose Wednesday's game against Minnesota. I wanted to kind of reflect on the last 10 games and a little bit on the full year while the ball, metaphorically speaking, is still in the air. I also think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about at the end of this episode, I'm going to talk about some of the fans. I mean, so many fans have written me wanting to hear my thoughts on Malone and where he stands, and I want to address that in this episode. And the reason, again, because tomorrow's outcome shouldn't significantly alter the perspective on the job that he's done this season. And also, I think it's important to kind of wait to these moments, because I'll admit, I think a lot of people's opinions have and probably should have changed over those six-game winning streak. You need the full story, or as close to a full story, to be able to offer your full evaluation. And I think we've seen a lot of things over the last, not just six games, but really the last 10, 15 games that have painted a more fuller picture of what kind of coach he is. So I want to address all of those things. But first, let's start the 10-10 by talking about the team as we always do. So the 10-10 episode, I look at the 10 most important Nuggets players over the last 10 games and give you a snapshot of what's happened with those players and with the team at large over that stretch. The Nuggets are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They are on a six-game winning streak currently, their longest of the season. Their previous longest was just four games. Their two losses came at Philadelphia and at Toronto, both the second one on a second night of a back-to-back. At Philadelphia game, you know, Philadelphia is a heck of a team. They're on a 16-game winning streak, or 14-game winning streak. One of the hottest team in basketball, and has been one of the hottest teams for the last couple months. And, you know, Denver hung with them neck and neck until a third quarter that they just got absolutely murdered in. So for a half, they looked like the better team. In the third quarter, things happened so quickly, it's hard to say, did they just finally, did kind of the talent catch up with the Nuggets and they were blown out of the water, or did they just have a bad couple of moments and couldn't recover? It's hard to say with that game. With Toronto, second night of a back-to-back, and they battled. Could have easily pulled that game out, even though they also gave up a big run in the third quarter. They battled back to make that game go all the way down to the wire. So their two losses, impressive losses, if you can say that, and their eight wins, I think very impressive wins, many of them on the road. Over the last 10 games, they've had the third best offensive rating, 113 points per 100 possession. They've had the 24th best defensive rating, 107.6. It's funny because we talk about this Nuggets team as, oh, the defense has really stepped up over the last, you know, little bit, but statistically that just hasn't been the case. They're still not that great on the defensive end. Maybe a little bit of improvement, statistically speaking. But I think they've gotten timely stops, and you look at the Portland game, obviously, is one good example, but there's been, throughout all of these close games, there's been a lot of good defensive closings for the Nuggets, where they have won tight games because of their defense, not necessarily because of their offense. They've got the seventh best net rating over that period, seventh best, so even though they're on the second longest winning streak, they only have the seventh best net rating, but that's because a lot of these games have been close. I mean, two overtime games, two single possession games. There's been some close ones in there. Offensive rebound percentage is fifth. They've been top five all year, basically. Defensive rebound percentage, 29th. And this is, I talked about this a little bit on yesterday's show. Definitely check that one out if you didn't listen to it. Above average episode recapping some of the things that happened in that Portland game, and also some big picture notes on the team and where they're at. But one of the things I talked about was how the defensive rebounding has really fallen off a cliff over the last 2.5 months. And I've seen a lot of people throw some theories out about what it is. My theory is, and I don't know, I think a lot of people have thrown out some simple answers. I think one of the bigger answers is Jokic is an elite defensive rebounder, and having him, a lot of these games lately, they've put Millsap on the center and had Jokic, you know, play guard, a power forward, stretch power forward, and that brings him away for the basket. So I think some of this just has to do with Jokic playing more perimeter-oriented, and there's been not just an effect on how they box out and rebound, but also where opponents take shots when Jokic isn't the guy there. There's a lot of rebounds right around the rim when Jokic is playing center, in large part because there's a lot of like short and mid-range shots. So there's a lot of like soft rebounds as opposed to hard ones. So I'm sure it's a combination of a bunch of things, but I think that's at least one of the reasons that Denver's rebounding has fallen off so much. They're 19th in pace, which is interesting. I think they play a nice up-tempo game in the half court, but they have not been fast-breaking a ton. And fourth in assist percentage, which I think is the best indicator for how closely the team is playing their best style of offense. I don't think they're by any means playing Jokic, what we call Jokic ball, the best version of their offense where the ball is hopping and all these pick and rolls and the court is spread properly. I don't think they've been playing a peak version of that, but they've been playing at least something pretty close and certainly effective in terms of generating assist opportunities and catch and shoot jump shot opportunities. First player on the docket, Nikola Jokic. Where else would we start? 23 points, 11.8 rebounds, 7.1 assists. Those are just absurd numbers. Those are Hall of Fame type numbers, and he's doing it all on 50-41-90 splits. So he's basically in the 50-40-90 club. It's actually 89% from the free throw line. So 50-41-89. Just absurd efficiency. Probably the best 10-game stretch of his career, all things considered. Certainly the best scoring stretch, I would say, of his career. Not just because of like the volume and efficiency, but the way he's doing it, how aggressive he's being and sort of just willing himself to buckets, I think, for one of the first times in his career. 4.6 three-point field goal attempts. So he's shooting 41% from behind the three-point line on over 4.5 attempts a game, which is akin to like Damian Lillard a season ago or maybe two seasons ago. It's high-volume three-point shooting, and he's knocking down quite a bit of them. It's pretty remarkable. His defense has actually been pretty good, especially over the last three or four games. In moments, he's had really good defensive stretches, and he's really strung them along. I thought the second half and fourth quarter of the Portland game, he had some very nice plays defensively. He's just been more engaged, I think, on that end. All in all, I just think it's an incredibly one. And he's putting his stamp on every single game. And I talked about this a little bit yesterday at the end of yesterday's episode, but they're not playing like the perfect style to accommodate him specifically. There's, you know, it's a little bit clunky at times, but in years past where he's sort of either sulked or just become passive and just kind of floated around, he's now, he makes his presence known almost every second he's out there. And I think that more than anything is the biggest thing that's grown in him over the last month. And I think it's encouraging when you look at the numbers he's putting up right now and you think he actually could be better. And we know this because in February they played, you know, because they were forced to, that offense really did hum around him so much and he was touching the ball so much and he was the center of everything that happened on offense. We know he can like average a triple-double or put up triple-doubles for several games in a row in that environment because he did it in February. Well, this is different because they're not playing necessarily perfectly to his skill set, and he's still putting up Hall of Fame numbers. He has struggled a little bit in the post recently against certain matchups, and we've seen both in the Minnesota game and the Portland game, he's really struggled with some of his jump hooks and just getting to the spots that he wants to in the post up. It's not so much, you know, he is missing some shots that we've seen him take, but he's also just not getting to the spot on the court he wants. He really likes to go to that right hand, and both Towns and Nurkic have been able to kind of force him away from that. But there's no longer, I don't think, a question of who the best player is on the team. Every single player in the Nuggets locker room and the coaching staff have said repeatedly over the last month that in different ways, they've said that this whole team is looking to Jokic now. They realize he's the guy, and everything starts with him. So I don't think that was really ever a question, a major question, but as the year has gone on, I think it's so clear now, and it's kind of, in a certain way, it provides some clarity going into next season, because coming in, assuming they don't sign some major free agent, going into next year's training camp, you know, there'll be this established pecking order at the top, which I think is so important for a team. Paul Millsap over the last 10 games. All these stats, guys, of course, are last 10 games, not on the season, so unless I say otherwise. Paul Millsap, 17 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. A few statement games over the last 10. He had the 36-point night in Oklahoma City. The very next night, of course, that was the start of the winning streak, and really what turned out to be a do-or-die game for Denver. I think Denver knew it was a do-or-die game. 36 points, his best game as a Nugget that night, carried the team, in that one through all four quarters. He had 26, 13, and 5 the next game versus Milwaukee. So two games in a row, probably his two best games as a Nugget player, and really just set the tone for this run. I think that was, as much as he hasn't looked like the best or even second best player offensively most nights, those two games set the tone and just provided what I think was the shot in the arm the team kind of needed. And so he deserves a lot of credit for that. I've been surprised by how easily he's gotten manhandled by bigger guys. And maybe I shouldn't be, because he's jacked, he's absolutely ripped, but he is a little bit older. He's not in his athletic prime. And on top of that, he's not that big in terms of just like raw size. Like Nurkic is a massive human, 300 pounds. And Nurkic is strong too, but he's not jacked like Millsap is. But I think just the sheer size makes a bigger difference than maybe I would have thought, because we saw Julius Randle kind of push him around. We've seen Nurkic, and we've seen just a couple other guys that have kind of been able to outmuscle him inside, and that's kind of surprising for me. The way Denver is trying to guard when there's a talented big and they want to protect Jokic from foul troubles and protect him from the pick and roll, they'll put Millsap on him, and that works for most guys. But when you get a real big-bodied guy, he's just not big enough to handle it. But he's definitely not looking like the guy we saw in November. And that's why I hesitate to even bring too much of this stuff up, because part of why maybe he's getting manhandled is because he just doesn't have the strength in both hands. And so much of battling inside is kind of using your hands and arms and stuff to kind of just fully immerse your weight into somebody. And he just hasn't been able to do that. He's also struggled with his three-point shot, I think 32% over the last 10 games. Recently, it seems even more. He had a couple air balls recently. Just doesn't look too confident or too smooth in his shot. He needs it, because the team really goes to a different level when he's able to knock down some early ones, him and Jokic both. And then the one other note I had in here is, you know, the Nuggets haven't really gotten a lot of deep transition post-entry play. That was a staple of the Jokic-Nurkic pairing, two bigs. And it was even a bit of a staple of the Millsap-Jokic pairing, is that they would get the ball in transition. You know, somebody would rim run, whether it was Jokic or Plumlee, and you just seal somebody so deep because you're so big, and maybe you got a little guy on you who's not used to guarding the post, because in transition you just have to pick up whoever. I thought that Millsap would be able to kind of be a king of this and would get a lot of early offense, because Jokic is really, really good at throwing that early transition post-entry pass whenever, you know, Wilson Chandler or Kenneth Faried or one of those guys buries himself so deep. We haven't got a lot of that, and it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure why. I'd have to keep a closer eye to kind of see what's going on there. Wilson Chandler, 9.4 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 44% three-point field goal shooting, 34%. Did I get that right? That sounds awfully high for him. Let me see here. Yep, 44%. Wow, really shooting well. 10.2 net rating is tied for the highest over the last 10 games. I think him and Will Barton, yeah, are the two highest, which surprised me. I didn't realize that. He did miss one game because he broke his nose and is now wearing the mask and has the bandages on his nose. Who knows how much that is affecting his aggressiveness. I think especially over the last couple games, he had the month of February where he really just looked like, right after the trade deadline, it looked like he was a whole new person just being aggressive and confident and scoring on guys when you were like, oh, wow, Wilson Chandler taking the dude off the dribble one-on-one three times in a row just because he knows the guy can't guard him. We haven't seen that Wilson. I think he's been back to being pretty passive. And so I don't know if that could have something to do with the nose. I mean, I imagine if my nose was broken, I'd probably be a little bit more tentative to drive into traffic. He does have a huge assignment tomorrow in that he will be guarding either Wiggins or Butler or both at different times. I'm sure he'll draw the assignment on both for certain moments. And both of those guys Denver has to keep in check. They're both, obviously Butler more so than Wiggins, but Wiggins is another like just high-volume scorer. If he gets going early, he could have one of those nights where he goes off. He's capable of scoring 40 points on any given night. So Chandler will be very, very, very important tomorrow on the defensive end. And he's really the only guy on the Nuggets roster with that kind of size, length, speed, and strength. Will Barton, 19.6 points, 5.4 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 50-41-90 split. So he's in the 50-40-90 club over the last 10 games. Again, that 10.2 net rating is the highest on the team. He has thrived as a starter, and it makes me wonder. Scott Hastings brought this up on his radio show the other day that made me look up. There'd only been about 70 minutes, I mean, maybe 65 minutes with Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, and Nikola Jokic. And that's a small lineup. It's a three-guard lineup with Millsap and Jokic, but it had outscored in like 65 minutes. It had outscored opponents by 50 points. Now, that's over the course of the season. I don't know if they ever played more than like 5 or 6 minutes at a time together, so you have to take this with a grain of salt. But that lineup just makes sense to me because you have three guys that all can shoot 40% behind the three-point line, drive off a pick and roll, DHO, whatever. And then you got two passing bigs that just open up the paint for that kind of thing. I think it's a relentless offensive unit. And then defensively, you still have Harris and Millsap as sort of two above average defensive players. Barton has some length, Murray hustles, and then, you know, Jokic, I think, is better than people think and cleans the glass. I just think that unit could be so good, and we were robbed, I think, by not having a healthier team this year to kind of discover that lineup. But Barton's a big part of it. I think if the Nuggets are able to make the playoffs, I think Barton's probably going to start in Gary's place again tomorrow. I don't think they're going to disrupt and go with a new starting lineup on the last game of the season. But if they make a playoff, I'm really curious to see how much Barton plays with the starters, how much he plays with the bench, and what his effectiveness is, because I suspect he will be a big part of sort of it. When everybody's healthy, I think that Nuggets bench doesn't lack for scores, where it's sort of lacked for that over the last 15 games or so. Jamal Murray, 18.5 points. Nope, 18 points, 3.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists. 37 minutes per game is a team high. He's young, he's athletic, he's in great shape, he's mentally tough, so I know he can handle it. But it's worth noting, you know, really this back half of the season, his minutes have gone through the roof. As Denver doesn't really have, especially with Gary Harris out, he's become so important because the Nuggets only have two reliable outside shooters outside of Gary Harris, and that's Murray and Barton. They both sort of play de facto point guard when they're on the court separately of each other, so you kind of have to have one of them on at all times. So Murray has just been playing a ton of minutes, Barton as well, but Murray, 37 minutes per game, it's worth noting. And his shot, he's 41-35-97 splits, so his field goal percentages are a little down. 35 from the three-point line, you know, is low for him, and it's worth wondering if the heavy minute load over this, if he's hitting that sophomore wall, so to speak, with the amount of minutes that he's played. Never in his life has he played as many minutes as he has this season, if you talk about total minutes. So I'm sure there's a little bit of body fatigue going on there. That being said, his 117 on-off offensive rating is the highest on the team. And like I said, because Harris is out, Jamal Murray just becomes that much more important of a player, you know, for the Nuggets and what they're trying to do. And his highs have been really high and his lows have been somewhat low over the last 10 games. Hasn't really had a lights out shooting performance. So not just the overall 3-point field goal percentage, but we really haven't seen the Jamal Murray that makes two or three 3-pointers in a row and just enforces the other team into a timeout. I thought we were going to see it in Portland. He had a pull up in transition 3-pointer when things were going well for Denver early on in that game. And I thought, okay, maybe this, you know, Murray has that look in his eye and he's ready to go. But that game actually, for his purposes, actually was more defined by the wide-open shots that he missed rather than the few that he hit. So tomorrow against Minnesota would be a great time for him to sort of, you know, he's past due, I think, for a big shooting percentage. So maybe tomorrow night's the night. He was a plus 26 in that Milwaukee game and took over in the fourth, and that was probably his best game of this stretch. He got that foul trouble, and maybe, again, the low minute total in that game maybe was the reason he was able to shoot a little bit better, but he got in foul trouble in that game, was forced to sit early in the third quarter and not come back to the fourth, and it's no coincidence, in my opinion, that Denver struggled so much in that third quarter. They were outscored by 22 points in that third quarter and still went on to win the game in large part because Jamal Murray's heroics in the fourth. So a plus 26 in that game, and I think the next closest Nugget was like a plus 10 or something. He was by far the best Nuggets player that game. I did want to make a note about Jamal Murray. It's the end of his second season, and I think he already feels a lot like a vet. If you just compare the average second-year player, not even average, but average like second-year player that goes in the top 15 of the draft, the second year, you know, there's still a lot of rough around the edges. And with Murray, that's certainly the case still, too. I think he still has a lot of growing to do. But if I were to tell you that tomorrow night against Minnesota he's the best Nuggets player on the court and is the reason that they won the game, you wouldn't be surprised by that. I mean, he's capable, with as much talent as the Nuggets have on their roster, he's capable on any given night of being the most impactful, certainly offensive player. And that's just kind of incredible. If you think back to the start of the year, I thought the first month of the year for him started really slow. And if you compare that month to where he is now, he is the player that has probably grown the most this season. And rightfully so. He's the youngest player to be getting this kind of minute, so it's kind of expected. But it doesn't always happen that way. And he was a guy that I think could have gone two different ways this year, and he's definitely improved. Devin Harris, 9 points, 3 assists, 40-37-82 splits. I think that's pretty average probably for who he is. I don't think he's better than a 37% 3-point shooter, although those numbers are dragged up a bit by his 3-pointers seem to come in bunches. I would say he's somewhat of an inconsistent shooter because he's shooting 37%, and it feels like he's had games where he's missed 6 in a row and games where he's made 3 in a row. So that's right around that percentage. He does have the worst net rating on the team, only minus 2.9. I've talked about how the bench units have struggled, so it's not a surprise that all of the starters are kind of big positive nets and all of the benches small negatives. I'm curious to see what happens in a playoffs with Will Barton and Devin Harris, what that backcourt would look like. We haven't seen a lot of minutes over the last, you know, few weeks with, it feels like Barton is playing the whole game, so it's not fair to say, but it is. I'm curious to see what it looks like when those two come in together or relatively close to each other, because that's a pretty good second backcourt to come in, and Devin Harris can provide some of the spot up shooting / point guarding that would allow Barton, I think, to be more of an attacker. So I'm curious to see what it looks like if we ever get to that point in the playoffs. And then Devin Harris won that Minnesota game for him, for the Nuggets. So as much as, you know, he's had the worst net or whatever, he's like almost single-handedly responsible for getting the Nuggets back into that Minnesota game when things were looking their worst. 3 straight 3-pointers I think he had, and just a couple of really great plays. Even in the Portland game, you know, the Nuggets down, I think, 3 points, and he gets a driving layup and then a 3-pointer back-to-back to take the lead. So he's had some big, like, sort of not clutch moments because they haven't come at the end of the game, but they've come at important moments in that third quarter. Torrey Craig, 4 rebounds per game in 14 minutes is pretty impressive. Really the only stat of his that jumps out, but I don't think it should jump out if you watch him play. The guy is just such a good rebounder and such a good hustle playmaker, and he's made so many big plays for this team. Mile High Sports, TJ McBride reported that he would be not added to the Nuggets roster. They would have to waive a player to be able to sign him in the event that they were to go to the playoffs. The Nuggets, according to TJ McBride, electing not to do that. Which is kind of a shame because I think he is probably a guy that deserved and that the Nuggets want to play in the event of a playoff series. I think he actually makes an impact, a small impact. I don't think it's a big one by any means, but it is the type of thing that maybe can swing a quarter or something like that. And if Denver's in a dogfight of a series, that could end up swinging a game. I'm not sure how much he'll play on Wednesday. With Gary Harris back, he only played a handful of minutes in this last one. And with Gary Harris's minutes restriction presumably going up little by little each game, Craig might be the guy that just finds himself out. Or it could be Devin Harris, or it could be Wilson Chandler. I mean, any of those guys could, or all of them can sort of lose a minute here or there to Gary Harris. But I suspect Torrey Craig is a guy that the coaching staff might play less and less going into a playoffs, or as the last game going into a playoffs. Trey Lyles played in 9 games, so he was a DNP in one of them. 6.4 points, 3.4 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 49-33-70 splits. He's just not getting consistent minutes. I don't know what – I'm not really sure what his role is when everyone is healthy, and this is part of the hard part. I think playing Jokic, Chandler, and Lyles together could have been very productive, but for mostly health reasons, the Nuggets just weren't able to explore that lineup enough, and I think you have got something like 100 minutes of that lineup of data, not enough to draw a conclusion on whether it's a positive or a negative. It was a big positive, but again, in such a small sample size, that could change in the course of like a 5 or 6 minute stretch if things went really good or really bad. But I would have liked to have seen that because I think it's kind of a natural progression. We wanted more minutes of small ball for Nikola Jokic. I think he's best at that. And actually, at 6'10" and 6'9", Wilson Chandler and Trey Lyles are actually pretty big for small ball. They're like, for example, Al-Farouq Aminu's enormous and Trey Lyles just as big. That's the type of matchup where Aminu's not going to kill you inside or anything like that. So I think they could have probably explored with those minutes a little bit better, and Denver would have been set up better, certainly going forward into next year, knowing if that's a viable front court option if those with those three. Mason Plumlee, 14.4 minutes, 6 points, 3.4 rebounds, 2.5 fouls. So in 14.5 minutes, he's picking up 2.5 fouls, 69% from the field, by far the highest on the team. He's a dunker and layup guy right now, almost exclusively. He did have a post-up against Portland, but he doesn't have him too often. 104 defensive rating is the second best on the team. 103 offensive rating is the worst on the team. That's pretty classic, I think, Mason Plumlee numbers. This is an offensive team, and he's, you know, not necessarily an offensive player, but he is a defensive guy, and so these things kind of make sense. He's come up huge in a couple of the wins. There's the block shot in OKC, you know, that really saved the season. And we have a funny photo up on our Twitter page and on Facebook of that block, that moment. Barton and Will Barton and Paul Millsap both have this terrified look on their face like they just lost the game. But of course, Mason Plumlee flies over and makes the game-saving block. It's really cool. He never really handles the ball anymore, which is kind of surprising. He's really settled into this super low usage role, which I think is right, especially when he's playing with Nikola Jokic. It's right for him just to kind of be a finisher, and that's kind of been what he's been for this team. But we don't see him like you saw in Portland, where the ball was just in his hands a lot. It's almost like that part of his game has really gone away, and I get why, because Denver has so many other playmakers in their front court. But it's just kind of an interesting thing to note. Last but of course not least, Michael Malone. And, you know, looking at him both at the last 10 games and as a season. And first of all, I have to say this. I think for people that are not on Twitter, not on Reddit, not on Denver Stiff's comment section, they're going to be surprised that this is even a topic. But they were never going to fire Michael Malone. That's my belief. I don't know this for a fact. This is my belief. I don't think he was ever going to be on the hot seat, assuming Denver won more than, say, 37, 38 games. I mean, I think the moment it was clear they were going to surpass that barrier, I think it was clear that he was going to return, because I think with all of the things that happened, it's just an organization just would probably not fire a coach that made an equal to last year record or better, given how many injuries and just how much bad luck Denver has had this season. So it was never, when we talk about these things, we're talking about them almost from the perspective of, you know, like just trying to grade what kind of job he is, and people have been asking this question, but it was never going to get to that point. I think when you go back 10 games for the Nuggets season, really, I thought Malone had really started to get some of the stress had maybe gotten to him. He had been a little bit, just short. You could tell that he was in a point of the season where he was very, very frustrated and just stressed out about everything. I think over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and this goes back even further than the 10 games, really to the Miami game. I think that's the first one for me where I look at it and I think the team really changed at that point and started taking steps in the right direction at that point. And they ended up losing several more. You know, the Miami game, they lost to the Toronto and Philly. But I think that they were starting to move in the right direction. And I think over the last 3 to 4 weeks, he's really done a good job, I think, on the whole, coaching this team. He's been better with things like saving his timeouts. You know, that was a big issue earlier in the season. He's been calm in important moments. And so I just think there's been, for him, the whole team has played better. And I think part of that is because I think he's coached better, quite frankly. And the team is playing right now. If you look at the Nuggets, you guys don't get to see in the locker room too much, but you get to see on TV. I think there's a lot of belief in this team. And you think about how many things have gone wrong, even as recently as 2-3 weeks ago, the team was losing close games or having those bad quarters. They all have a lot of belief right now and just confidence. And I don't think – I've been around the NBA long enough to know that these things don't just happen. They're not – you can't take for granted that those types of things because they're so – they really are sort of rare to the degree that Denver has. Like, this is a cohesive team. They still think they're going to make the playoffs. And if they make the playoffs, they're a team that thinks they can make noise. And that's important. And to be honest, they're playing at a level right now that I think you have to be incredibly encouraged by. I think the loss of Gary Harris over this last 10-game stretch, you know, he played in one, just the last one of the last 10 games. He missed 11 straight before that. The loss of him really disguised how much this team has turned the corner, in my opinion, because defensively the team has done a pretty good job, and offensively they've willed their way to some point manufacturing points. But if you just replace, you know, half of the shots that Devin Harris took and Torrey Craig took and Wilson Chandler took with Gary Harris taking those shots, I just think they're winning a lot of these close games even more comfortably, and maybe even in some of the games that they you know, got blown out of, like the Philly game or the Toronto game. So I actually think the Nuggets in some ways are a sleeping giant. If they can get healthy and actually make it into the playoffs, I think that there is a chance that a couple days off heading into a playoff series and this team is at their highest level that we've seen at the entire season. I think there's actually, not only is there a good chance, I would bet on it. I would bet that if the Nuggets make the playoffs, we will see the best version of them over the next couple of weeks. So I see a lot of the, so it's not, and it's by no means perfect. That's the thing about it is they've outperformed Vegas's expectations for the third year in a row despite all of the problems. They were projected to win 45.5 this year. If you would have told Vegas Millsap would miss half of the year, they probably would have lowered that by 4 or 5 games. So the fact that they've beaten expectations is really, really impressive, especially for a third straight year. But at the same time, I see all of the comments, like I said, on Reddit, and people send them to me every day, like by the dozens, you know, asking me to evaluate this or that about them. I see the concerns, and to be honest, there's a lot of like legitimacy to them. I've voiced them on this show. This show is so much, half of the episodes of this show are recap games, recap episodes of a game that I just watched. And my biggest critiques of Malone all season have been sort of game management decisions. Now, these are the easiest things to critique because when a team loses and there was a decision to be made, you can always say, well, that was the bad decision. So some of this is just, you know, I naturally have to talk about what went wrong, but it's much easier to diagnose after the fact than it is before. So, a lot of my critiques about Malone are about some of these things that people throw in my mentions, lineup rotations, their inability to sort of embrace the style of basketball that best suits Nikola Jokic. I think a lot of these things, but I think that how I weigh those types of concerns are so much lower. Again, they're very, very important, and this team certainly has a lower ceiling than what they should if those things aren't corrected in time. But I am much more confident in Malone's ability to correct some of his shortcomings in years to come. and so much more confident that some of the that he would look better with more resources, for example. I think he needs to be surrounded by a few more voices that can really challenge him on things. And that's not necessarily just coaching staff. I think players, you know, you talk about, like, I think Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, they're both young guys and they're both do what coach tells you type guys. I think almost if there was a few more just veteran, vocal veterans, offensively minded, that could even kind of point things out and work with Malone. This is why I think a backup point guard, like not necessarily a Jameer Nelson, but a Jameer Nelson type, an experienced veteran point guard that can kind of grab his ear and say, hey, look, some of the guys don't like this, or here's something we can do that I think will get the guys loose, and like just things like that. So I understand some of the complaints that people have, and I understand some of the frustrations about this season, because there were so many games where, you know, it felt like they should have never lost. But I think when you step back and look at the big picture, this team is in just such a great spot, and I do think he deserves a lot of the credit for where they are at. And so while he's not perfect, I still think the good far outweighs the bad, and the realistic scenarios of, like, firing a guy who has improved your team by 6 to 7 games every single season is, I don't think people understand just how crazy of an idea that is. even if you do disagree with some of his decision making. That's it, guys. Tomorrow, obviously the biggest game of the year, Minnesota, potentially the last game of the year. I'm excited for it. I hope you guys are. The Nuggets are in a good spot, and I'm excited to see them play. Thanks so much. I'll obviously have an episode tomorrow recapping that one. Look forward to talking to you then.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.